Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Inside the Walls podcast. I am your host, Jim Erlang. Alongside me, my partner, crime from the Omaha area of our country, Omaha, Nebraska, Matt Pat.
Hey, how's it going, Jim?
Dude, I just saw what you just sent me. But yes, I did. Okay, but anyways. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, another edition of episode 138 here Inside the Walls podcast. Remember, you can follow us on any platform, as you can see above. We're on Rumble, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on caffeine.tv. We're everywhere at InWallsPod. Also, you can find us here live on NationalArenaLeague.com's Facebook page and the website. So you can find all your updated information on the National Arena League from myself, Matt Patton, and one of our other colleagues, Dukon Williams, who does a lot of good highlights and breakdowns of the games himself. We'll get more into it here for you podcast listeners. Remember, you can download us on any podcast platform, Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeart, everything. I've seen us everywhere. I want to say thank you for your continued support on that matter. And thank you for the individual. I'm not going to mention her name for reaching out on the email this week about that we need to update the episodes more often because she doesn't have a chance to get on YouTube. I updated it, make sure she had her copy, and she was very thankful for me to respond. So we're on Spotify. We're on all our podcast platforms. So you can find us here. You can find us especially at the YouTube network itself, Inside the Walls Network. We have 8 shows that cover all things indoor and arena football. Remember, shows are all throughout the week from different leagues, but most importantly, here in the National Arena League, Inside the Walls podcast, Arena Football Statement, and Matt Patton's show, the Cut Prime, whatever thingamajig, Prime Cuts of Omaha Beat podcast, of course, is Matt's show. Matt, early observations of week one of the National Arena League. You were there live in Omaha for your preseason kickoff, but we also had 2 other matchups around the league as well. What was your early observations from week one of the National Arena League?
I mean, my early observations from week one of National Arena League 2024 is it's going to be exciting this year. You know, both games, Carolina traveling out to Idaho and Sioux City hosting Oklahoma Flying Aces, going to be – both games were exciting. Both games were fun to watch. It's going to be a fun year in the NAL. That's my first and foremost impression of the league from week one.
One of the things that really stood out to me is that Idaho, they have some, in the words of Riggs, the color commentator, they have some dogs on that team. And I think Carolina winning that game in Idaho thinking that, they're something didn't stink. And Idaho played a tough game to the very end. And it was an entertaining game, especially the game in Sioux City. It was back and forth until midway through the second quarter when you started to see Sioux City, based on their experience, in my opinion, they had more talent, they had more experienced roster than Oklahoma. But you saw that how the game was developing early. Some key coaching situations that kind of made me as a viewer go, why are we doing this at this point? But again, Sioux City's been around the block. They know what they're doing. And there are some milestones that were hit in Sioux City that we'll go over as we break down the Sioux City game. But my other observation is that I'm not going to talk about your game because it really wasn't a game. Because I look at the score, and the score was like 74-0. And I'm like, am I watching a basketball game and the team forgot to score points on the other end? It was just a one-sided affair. Again, preseason games – against other league opponents, you can't really judge what your team is because the players that you're playing from on the other side of the field don't play your style or they don't play this type of game that you earned. It's like an outdoor football player compared to an indoor. You have a transition that may be a couple of weeks before your team actually gets acclimated to the conditions. And there's some people on that Tri-Cities, I think. Tri-Titans was a – there's some – some dudes you look at there go, yeah, he can play ball, but you could tell they're not used to the faster pace of those 2-second windows in the indoor arena style compared to that 6-second window that you can get in the outdoor game. You could tell that they were one step too slow And of course, when Omaha was going full gear, I watched a couple of possessions, and it was like two plays, you're in the end zone. And it became like a track meet, but you kind of expect that from a team that plays the indoor style in Omaha and a team that does not in Tri-State. What were your opinions about the game in Omaha?
Yeah, I mean, Tri-State, you know, they came in and they put up a valiant effort. I kind of had the sense early on that it was going to be a long night for the Tridents, and I was right. I know some of the players that play for the Tridents, and I know that, you know, they're great dudes. First and foremost, I want to send a shout-out to TJ Kestelson, who was the quarterback, who at the end of the game actually got knocked out and was on the field unconscious for a little bit. Word is that he's okay and he's going to be fine. He'll be able to recover and play for the Tridents this upcoming season. You know, it's a weird dynamic with the teams from the Tridents League because they actually play eight-man outdoor football. So it's kind of – it's similar, but it's also not similar. And you can see that a lot with the Tridents where a lot of their plays were slow-developing plays. You know, they were indoor-style plays and their guys were in motion and stuff, but it was very – very slow developing, very, you know, slow and almost plodding along type thing where, you know, Omaha, you know, Tommy missed a few throws and I don't know if that was just the rust or just, you know, first game of the season, you know, whatever. But it definitely was a difference in talent, in my opinion, based on, you know, just what I saw on the field. And like you said, I mean, what can you judge from that? You can judge, you know, not as much as you would from obviously a game where we're playing a league opponent, but it was a lot of fun, obviously, as a fan for Omaha, because I mean, we scored 74 points. And, you know, the game ended, I think, about 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So who knows what would have happened at that point. But like I said, just, you know, it seemed early on like it was going to be quite a big blowout. And then it turned out to be just that, which was fun for us, but, you know, not really probably super fun for the Tridents or the people that were there to support the Tridents. So
what was the attendance in Omaha? You were there live, of course.
They don't ever announce attendance, like numbers, but it was like for it being a non-league preseason game, it was really, really good. I mean, it was packed. It was loud. There were some open seats and stuff, obviously, but I mean, I would say it was probably a good three quarters to more than three quarters full. So, I mean, I thought it was a really good turnout considering Sunday afternoon, St. Patrick's Day, and just the fact that it was a non-league opponent. Yeah, I was really impressed with the turnout.
Not bad that we had some good attendance in Sioux City and in Idaho for week one of the NAL season. One thing I want to say about the that Triton game again is – You can judge a team by certain aspects in the preseason, but you can also know that you can't really, you know, go full forward with, oh, this is what our team's going to look like. Oh, this is how we're going to do this team. Because, if, for instance, you look at Idaho. They played the Desert Sentinels last week and looked like they were an unstoppable force. They played Carolina. Competition got a lot tougher, and it was more of a struggle. And you look at Sioux City, they took care of Minneapolis Warriors. And when they get Oklahoma, it a little bit more, got a little tougher. And you can tell that the base of the competition increases based on when you're playing teams that play the same style and play, well, you can't say they have the same, caliber player, but again, even in league play, teams may not have the same caliber teams. But you're playing against guys who know the game. And one thing I noticed when we transitioned to the regular season, you can tell now is these teams are made for the style, and now you can tell who has the better rosters. Even though the games may have not gone direction 10 to what the rosters will look like, like you think of team A has four superstars, you think they'll outplay a team that only has one because they got four. And usually it never happens because football isn't overall team sport. One thing I did notice this weekend, and unfortunately for the quarterback for Tri-State, one thing I did see in around the league is pretty healthy. No major injuries that I've seen or really was like, man, that's going to hurt this team 3 or 4 weeks down the road. Again, You mentioned about Tri-State's quarterback. Hopefully he gets back on his feet and he gets back and playing the game he loves. It sucks no matter what league, what player, what type of sport it is. It sucks that an athlete who's playing this game that he loves gets hurt in a way. And you're like, man, it's bigger than football. So hopefully he gets better. And again, around the league, pretty good. Like nothing major really happens. Yeah. So
we had an official in our game that actually got injured too in a play late in the game as well. So I didn't catch his name, but I hope he's also recovering quickly and that he can get back on the field to help officiate some of our games there in Omaha. So,
with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be doing something. Well, if you're an original Inside the Walls podcast from last year, you know about we like to do some highlights while we just talk and break down the games. This time around, if you saw his video earlier this week, Duqan Williams breaks down week one of the NAL with a great highlight reel package. These videos are by him, so I have to give credit where credit's due to Duqan Williams. He said, Jim, use it. You know what to do with it. You talk about ball better than me, but you can use my video. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, all the highlights that you'll see from here on point are not mine. They're actually cut and edited by Duqan Williams, so I have to get the man a shout out here on Inside the Walls podcast, the official podcast of the National Arena League. With that, let's get into talking some games today. Ready? Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go to your arch rival up north to the Sioux City Bandits as they take on the Oklahoma City Flying Aces. This game was a back-and-forth affair early. One thing I noticed about this game that I was really intrigued by is – we didn't know who the starting quarterback was going to be for Oklahoma until about 2 days before the game. And again, Cam Young was the guy who stepped in for the Oklahoma Flying Aces. And some of the things that you saw in this game that was really intriguing to me is Oklahoma was trying to find their way in the game. Halfway through the second quarter in this game, Sioux City did slightly push away, start pulling away, and then a big key turnover got Oklahoma back into the game. Strickland, with the interception, got the game back, scored quick, boom. We had one possession game. Then Sioux City went down the field and answered quickly. Big-time milestone happened in Sioux City this past weekend as Scott Jensen, the quarterback for the Sioux City Bandits, threw for this 200th touchdown, I believe was the goal was 200.
Yes.
So, big achievement. So, congratulations. But also, there's an individual on that team that I got to give a shout-out to. And I'm going to call him the Swiss Army knife, and that's Brandon Mintis. Dude kicks. He's a fullback. He's a linebacker. He plays every position.
Yeah.
He is a dog. I watched him in the game. He was everywhere. I think he played almost every single play. Not really.
The crazy thing about that is Mintz, and I wanted to go back really quick, and I saw the highlight there where from early in the game where Bruno jumped against the wall and caught that ball or whatever. It looked like he caught the ball. My wife and I watched this game together, and we both saw that play, and we both thought it was a touchdown. So, I was like, he caught that, right? And she was like, yeah, he totally caught that. And then they came back and said, no, it wasn't. And I was like, okay, cool, whatever. But man, what a play. But, yeah, Brandon Mintz, like, that guy, he's been playing forever. He's been playing a lot forever, and nothing but kudos to him. And shout out to Jensen for getting that 200th career touchdown pass. So,
and of course, there's a certain individual that played for Oklahoma that I have to give a shout out to. He was, in my opinion, a key factor in the game, and his name was Rashad Ridley. He had a catch in that game. I think it's in the highlight here in the fourth quarter. It looked like the ball would the quarterback threw behind him, and he made it like a circus catch. And I think he's going to be, as the season progresses, he's going to be a problem, in my opinion. And yeah. I keep looking at Sioux City, and I look – you got Bruno, and then you go Mintz, and then you got Puszka?
Andrew Prohaska. Prohaska.
Yeah. I'm butchering the names. I do apologize. I'm just going off the top of my head right here. That's a trio. That's a trio that I'd be like, if they get on, I don't want to play them. I'm very impressed. Of course, yeah. As the game progressed, you could tell, like, Sioux City wanted to pull away. They wanted to as much, but you got to give credit where credit's due with Oklahoma. They kept it in the game. And surprisingly, I know a lot of people won't know this, but Oklahoma outdid Sioux City. Oklahoma had a total yards of 169 and a total offensive yards compared to Sioux City's 133. But yep. What got Oklahoma is that they kept shooting themselves in the foot. Turnovers and penalties. They had a turnover, 8 penalties for 55 yards. That is a killer in the indoor game. What also was the opposite for the Sioux City Bandits is their rushing attack. Sioux City had a rushing attack that you could say was explosive, but it was enough to keep them ahead of the sticks. 14 first downs, got them enough to win the game. Crucial turnover at the end of the game was a determining factor to flip the field to get the Sioux City Bandits to get them at 1-0. The final score in this game was Sioux City 37, Oklahoma Flying Aces. Oklahoma Flying Aces is 24.
It's okay. A couple things I wanted to point out, if you don't mind, is one thing that I do know is I listened to Coach Davis after the game. He did a little interview after the game on Saturday, and he did mention that, when Torrence Carr-Young was called in to be quarterback, it was because they lost their two quarterbacks like literally Wednesday of that week. They found out that those two guys were no longer going to be part of their team. So that's the hard thing for them is they came into the game not knowing really who was going to, I think he said it was Wednesday. It might've even been like Thursday or Friday, but anyways, I just know he said coming into the game, they weren't really sure. And so they asked Torrence to step up. And the fact that he stepped up, went 8 of 14 for 108 yards and 3 touchdowns. He did have that one pick, but like, it was a solid game for him, I thought, and they did, you could see a lot of him trying to use his athleticism, which obviously he's an athletic guy. We've seen him play before in other teams and things like that. But I think the thing that stood out to me, and you talked a little bit about like key moments in the game, right? I believe if I remember correctly, there was a moment early in the first quarter where Oklahoma had a 4th and 2 or something, like a short 4th and short. And I was like, oh, they're definitely going to come out here and try to kick it and, flip the field or whatever, even though there's no punts. I mean, technically, long field goals turn into punts unless they've got guys that have good legs. And they went for it and they didn't get it. And then they turned the ball over on downs to Sioux City. And so it was just an interesting call that early in the game for me, not questioning Coach Davis's choices or anything, but just the fact that he went to go for it that early in the game when he could have potentially, flipped the field and, who knows what would have happened from there.
This was basically you could say this is the pure definition of a defensive battle.
Yeah.
But it didn't present itself as a defensive battle in the first half. I got a lot of sense in the middle of the game, Sioux City was trying to pull away, but the Oklahoma Flying Aces just kept everything in front of them. No big plays down the field, and they kept Sioux City the nickel and dime down the field. And I don't think Sioux City wants to play that style of a game. I think they're a type of team that wants to throw it deep, but they couldn't. Oklahoma kept everything in front of them. And usually when you have a defense that keeps everything in front of them, you're going to have defensive backs biting, risking, going after that pump fake. And I'm surprised Sioux City didn't hit a lot with the quick pump fakes, the slant routes, or try and go for a quick if I was a coach and I knew the play defense was coming up, I'll do a quick pump fake and have a double move on the outside. You get a receiver down the field. But it felt like Oklahoma kept trying to tell Sioux City, you're going to have to nickel and dime yourself down the field, and you're going to try to win the game by defensive ball. And they did very well, in my opinion. One of the things I want to say about Oklahoma is that they got that second quarter, they felt they were pretty dead, in my opinion. Really no energy, and they really didn't want to execute the game plan. It felt like Sioux City was walking through the motions, and it felt like Oklahoma was just waiting for the play to happen and not creating that play to really change the game. I do think these teams If they match up again, which I think they do later in the year, got to look at the schedule as the schedule has changed. It's changed since the previous last announcement. It's going to be an intriguing matchup the next time they meet. But I think Jensen, that three-headed monster, Bruno, Mintz, Jensen, they did enough. That's enough to get a win. Get the dubs early. I've always said, and I've heard this from coaches, and I've heard this from other players, get the wins now. Don't chase them at the end of the season. Because if you chase wins at the end of the season, you're putting yourself in the more either in the bad position, or you're putting yourself in situations where it's almost do and die. Get them early. Sioux City got the win early. But for Oklahoma, I just got to say this, guys. No preseason game. You come out here and you showed out. One or two plays didn't go your way, and it cost you the game. But, hey, like I said before in our preview show of the season, I think they're going to be a team that you don't want to play later in the year. I think they have a scrappy team. And keep an eye on Rashad Riley. I'm telling you, that dude has it. He is it. He is it for Oklahoma. I think him, Carl Young, I think it's, was it Caldwell is the other guy who scored a touchdown? Or I think it was Mario Caldwell is the one who scored the touchdown. If not, no, I think it was Davis. Davis was it. Zune Davis. He's the one that got the other touch. He's another guy to keep an eye out on for Oklahoma. But overall, observation of this game, I'll shut up and we'll get to the next game. Overall observation of this game, Sioux City had a game under them. They kind of knew what they were going to do. Oklahoma, this is their first game as a franchise or this season, that is. And it's like back and forth. And I got to give credit where credit's due. They played hard, one or two plays didn't go their way. And I think Oklahoma is going to be a force later in the year. I just know, I even said in the preview, they're going to struggle early and then finish strong. But Sioux City gets the win in front of a crowd that's 2,000 reported with a time limit of 2 hours and 22 minutes. Nice, fast game there in the Tyson Event Center in Sioux City, Iowa. Big win for Sioux City, 1-0. Oklahoma, got to go to the ground ball.
Just give you an idea. These two teams will meet again in Sioux City in week four, first weekend in April, and then they'll meet a third time in week 13, where Sioux City will travel to Oklahoma to take on to Enid there to take on the Flying Aces. So,
all right, so 1-3 matchups. So Sioux City has the 1-0 series lead. So does Sioux City keep the home field advantage, or does Oklahoma steal home field from them? Getting a little basketball into there, like if we're playing NBA. But anyways, overall, I like what Sioux City did. Second quarter was kind of like they walked through the motions, and Oklahoma was waiting for a play to be made. If Oklahoma, in my opinion, made that play in the second quarter, we could be talking about a different result in Sioux City this past week. And then again, Sioux City wins. They're 1-0 on the season. They have a bye week, so they get to rest up. I think they have back-to-back bye weeks, if I'm correct. Am I right?
It appears so.
So back-to-back bye weeks for week two, same as Oklahoma. Oklahoma has a bye week next week as well. But we have another game in week one of the season, and we go to Napa in Idaho, where the Idaho Horsemen hosted the Carolina Cobras from they are the team that was the last remaining team from last year's National Arena League. Fully loaded team in Carolina. You mentioned what I've said in the previews about Adam Smith, Guy Myers, James Summers, and Williams, Kendrick Ings, and name a few. But one thing I want to say about this game is the first player that came to my mind in this game, and he showed out, wasn't a Cobra. Who? His name is none other than Austin Schaefer, the quarterback for Idaho. He impressed me. Why? He had to take the game in his hands and keep them in the fight, and he did so. Entire game.
Jim, fun fact, okay? Schaefer was 17 of 18, and that one incompletion was actually an interception.
I mean, again, four touchdowns, I think he's what he got.
He did. Four touchdowns. Yep.
And you're telling me he had to – I think he had about 60, 65 yards rushing. He is the player of the week. If the NAL hasn't said that he's the player of the week, again, probably. I should do better looking at the stats. If he's not, I'll be surprised. If he is my player of the week based on his stat and performance. But I know there's a lot of fans in Carolina said he lost the game and he's the player of the week. Well, yes, last year in the National Arena League, there were five players of the weeks given to a guy who was on the losing side of things. But I look at this game, and I wanted to say something about Carolina that I know a lot of Carolina fans know me from previous years with Coach Rez and beyond that about how I break down games. I watched this game, and I look at that line of scrimmage, and I saw Idaho go toe-to-toe with Carolina. It really wasn't a one-sided affair. Idaho manned up. It was one-on-one. I believe that Carolina got to this game, thought they were going to walk through this game and get an easy win and head back to Greensboro to take on Omaha in week two. They did not expect for this to be a one possession game late in the fourth quarter. I think, and I know I've talked to many receivers on this Carolina staff. I think they were reading their press clippings. They're the best team. They're the number one power in the power rankings. They're getting pumped up in the coaches' polls. All the websites, all the podcasts are saying that they're the number one team. I think they bought into their press clippings a little bit. Guy Myers, in my opinion, really wasn't what we thought he was going to be. But one thing I want to say about Guy is that as the game progressed, he got better. Yes, he looks shaky. He missed overthrew a couple receivers, but he got better. Even though I think Carolina may have read their press clippings a little bit, one thing I do have to say is my boy, Adam Smith, was out there doing his thing. 7 receptions, 70 yards, receiving 2 touchdowns. Oh, hum. That's Adam Smith in a nutshell. Kendrick King's got into the score with a touchdown. He only got an interception, but one thing I know about Kendrick Ings is that he's not done yet, and he will be back. Never overlook him. But, again, we mentioned how Schaefer had a good game. You look over with Guy Myers, he was 19 for 35, 149 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. But there is one crucial thing that he has there that didn't cost Carolina the game. Is the turnover. 0 turnovers. He also had 8 carries for 30 yards and a rushing touchdown. So Guy Myers started the game off slow, but as the game progressed, he got better. And as he got better, the offense of Carolina started to move freely. It's like almost that adjustment period we talked about. Carolina did not have that that exposition game or that preseason game. They had to go right into the fire and go on to and make that road trip to Idaho. As the game progressed, they got better. But one thing I liked about Idaho is that even though they've maybe been considered like the underdog or we don't belong in the same field as Carolina, they stayed toe-to-toe with the Carolina Cobras. This game, I hate to say to the Carolina fans, expect this a lot in the NAL this year. Expect Sioux City to do the same thing and expect Omaha this Sunday to do the exact same thing. They're very competitive. They are a very solid team. Yes, they may have played in another league, but they're a team that can beat you on any given weekend. This is not going to be what you think is going to be a 10-0 season, number one seed, host home field advantage, and win a championship. There are other teams in this league that are not the teams that you used to play last year that are no longer in the league. It's not going to be a shoe-in. And the reason I say that is because you look at how this game played early in the game. Every time Carolina scored, Idaho scored right back. Idaho answered every punch given to them. Every single punch they given to them. Two guys I want to give a shout-out to because I know they do not get enough love. That's Ryan Stokes and Rashad Flounders. Those two dudes literally single-handedly helped Schaefer keep them in the game. Yep. They made some big plays. There was a passing play, I think, in the first quarter or first or second quarter. I think it was Flanders. He did a quick – he did a one-yard juke inside and did a corner and went to a post. The DB was like just like, okay, I'm on the island by myself, and he is in the end zone. It was a beautiful play. Get a chance to go watch that. Idaho's going to be a we may not have him in the power rankings. We didn't even mention them last week in the power rankings. They impressed me.
Definitely.
But I look at this game, man. I'm going to say this. Idaho, I don't know, man. I even though they lost, they're scary. They're scary, and
yeah,
they're
only looking better
as the season progresses.
Yeah, definitely. I have to agree. Like, you know, Rashad Flanders, very impressive with those five receptions, 46 yards, two touchdowns for the Horsemen. I misspoke earlier. Schaefer was actually 17 of 35, not 17 of 18. I kind of misread the stats there on the screen on my screen, but yeah. Either way, you know, I would be lying if I said when I saw this game on the schedule, I was like, oh, Carolina's going to run away with that one. I'd be lying if I said that because that was what I thought going in. But I was very impressed with Idaho. I was very impressed with, like, say what you will about, like, there were some comments online about, oh, Idaho's net structure and this and that and what have you. But look, the bottom line is that Idaho looks like they've got all their stuff in a row, all their ducks in a row. Looks like they know what they're doing out there, and they look like they're going to be competitive. And I'm here for that all day long. Like, this is going to be a fun season in the National Arena League. Like you said, you know, I think there was this perception that Carolina was kind of above everybody else in the league, maybe close with Omaha or whatever. But I think any given weekend, we're going to see any kind of outcome. We've talked ad nauseum about, you know, Colorado's Coach Shaw and about the history with, you know, Richard Davis and Irv Strobeen and, you know, the staff over in Omaha with Tatum and those guys. And just, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the coaches and staff and the teams here. And I'm just excited that the season's here. But Idaho impressed me a ton. One takeaway that I have from this game, though, is I can do without that giant score box on the bottom of the video screen. It's just a nitpicky thing for me as a fan because it cuts off part of the field. And as little as it is, my brain is just like, why is the wide receiver disappearing from the screen? But that's just neither here nor there. But very impressed with the first week of the season, especially from Idaho, and looking forward to big things for this league moving forward.
Well, with that, remember when I said about should the National Arena League, all right, should have awards out? They do.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And I did say, was it Flanders? No, I didn't say Flanders. I said Schaefer. Week one's players of the week, offensive player of the week is Austin Schaefer, Idaho Horseman quarterback. Defensive player is of the week is defensive lineman Caleb Lowry. And special teams is Fred Bruno from the Sioux City Bandits. So I was right about the offensive player of the week.
Yeah, all very deserving. One other thing that I wanted to make an observation of, and I noticed it on the highlight here, and that's why I'm bringing this up, is there was some discrepancy amongst the officiating this weekend in that the nets are live. We had a play in the game in Omaha where the Trident's quarterback actually threw the ball and it bounced off the net, and our guy caught it. And I'm looking around going, isn't that an interception? And the referees just blew the play dead. And I know that that was mentioned at the Omaha Beef Coaches Show on Monday night that, you know, there's some kinks to work out. And that's okay. It's early in the season. So, you know, some of the new rule sets for some of these referees, but hopefully they'll reiterate that rule and that the nets are live and those balls are playable off the net for both the offense and defense.
Well, nets are live. Yeah, we saw that there in Omaha. You know, it's the early kinks of a season. You got to go through it. It happens. It happened last year. It happened 2 years ago. It happens when there's new teams in the league and they're adjusting to the rules. And also, it's the referees. It takes time. The product that is now is going to be 10 times worse than what the product is going to be in 5 weeks, 6 weeks, where that product is going to be pristine. We've seen the growth. Usually, week one's the worst. Week two gets better. Week 7, week 8, week 10, championship game, the product's completely different on the field. So I have nothing. I'm not worried about refs. I just don't. I don't worry about it in week one. I know there's little quirks and a lot of fans get mad. I just go, it's noise. Let's go play some football. I'd rather have drama with that than other stuff that I have to deal with behind scenes. But again, I'm happy that there's football back. And again, I'm proud that I can, on the weekends, starting Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, turn on the YouTube or any platform that's on, get to enjoy some football, and especially a version of a game that I love covering, and that is the indoor and arena game.
Absolutely.
And then, again, the final score in Napa, almost said Omaha. We already talked about Omaha. We're not going to talk about you guys anymore. And the final score in Napa. That's what the question I wanted meant to ask you. At the very end of this game, a deuce would have tied it, right?
Yeah.
They went to go kick it. It felt like they just conceded the game. They didn't do an onside kick or go for the deuce. Or do you think that was a missed kick by Idaho?
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. I noticed that too, and I didn't really know, kind of didn't really think about it at the time, but now that you bring it up, I'm not really sure. I don't know if their kicker, can make the deuce. I didn't really pay attention to, was he kicking it off the net or anything like that, whatever. So, yeah, you would think the natural thing would be like, hey, we've got that opportunity for 2 points. Let's try to kick it off that net or whatever. I guess I didn't think about it at the time, so, you know.
All right. When I watched the game with a couple of buddies, we're like, did they just concede it, or it was just the kicker went to go for the deuce, he slipped, and the ball went to the left and kind of swiped it. But it was an interesting final score. Came down to the wire. Carolina pulls a 51-49 victory in Napa, and they go to Greensboro this weekend to take on the Omaha Beef. When we come back after this, we'll break down a unique matchup, but we won't go in depth. We'll just talk about how unique it is. Then Clash in Greensboro coming up right after this. Week 2 action of the National Arena League begins in lovely Colorado, where the Colorado Spartans are playing host to a unique opponent from the American Indoor Football League, the Cedar Rapid River Kings. It's a preseason game, but it's the first matchup between two leagues that are not considered semi-pro. They're both professional leagues, the National Arena League versus the AIF. When you look at this matchup, what do you see in this matchup, Matt, and what do you think
will happen? Yeah, so, I mean, first and foremost, I love the fact that the AIF and the NAL are coming together for this matchup. That's really awesome. It's taking place in Colorado, yes?
Correct.
So I'm really interested to see the difference in the strategy for the Cedar Rapids River Kings, who play in the AIF, who don't use the rebound net system but use the other indoor net system that we've seen. So kind of the strategy that they use for that. Also just interested to see what we see from Colorado. Are we going to see a typical game plan from Colorado, or are we going to see some more of those, some of those second and third string guys seeing the field and getting an opportunity to play in front of friends and family that are probably going to be in attendance there? But also, I'm sure the River Kings are coming in here, regardless of this being an exhibition game or not, trying to prove that they belong in indoor football and potentially maybe someday making a play to potentially move to the NAL. Who knows, but just showing that, the talent level isn't that much different would probably be the mindset of the River Kings in this one. So I'm actually really excited to see how this goes, but, it's definitely unique in that we don't often see two separate leagues playing each other in any kind of game, let alone an exhibition.
Yeah, it's kind of unique, but also it's groundbreaking, you could say. You really never see rival leagues have matchups in preseason against each other. But again, I look at it as a way of, you play football, we're playing football, we agreement, we want to play football, let's play football. Who cares what league or association? You can say this is the SEC taking on the ACC or the Big Ten and the SEC. It's a matchup. Again, for some of the people that don't know who Cedar Rapids River Kings are, they're in the AIF. They're a coach by, I think it's Duncan, not Duncan. Darren Clark Jr. is the head coach for the Cedar Rapids River Kings. And, of course, we got Coach Shaw in Colorado. So preseason is preseason. You really don't want to over-examine preseason games, in my opinion. But this, you can say, is an upper competition for the Spartans. So we saw what they did against Northern Colorado when they last week. Now they get to play a team that has dudes that were recruited, that were played in arena football leagues all around the country. Cedar Rapids has a squad, and it's going to be an entertaining game. Probably a very low-key underdog game to watch this weekend in the National Arena League. But one of the biggest games that we want to talk about is the clash in Greensboro. Yes, it is the NAL game of the week, and it's the only NAL game, and it's between the one and well, the Omaha Beef, who are 0-0 technically, 1-0, but conference or league schedule, it's 0-0 versus the 1-0 Cobras in Greensboro. They're playing Sunday in the Greensboro Coliseum. It's a big matchup, but I'm just a spectator. Matt's a fan. Matt, what are you looking forward to in this game between the Cobras?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to two really, really good indoor football franchises, you know, locking heads and just going at it in this game. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know for a fact it's going to be fun. I haven't decided if I'm going to watch it at home or if I'm going to watch it at the game watch party that we're having here in town. Probably try to go to that game watch party at least for a little bit, but I'm just excited to see our guys on the field again in a game that matters. And can we keep that streak alive that we have right now of being undefeated over the last 14 games, if you count the preseason last year and this year?
Well, mentioning the breakdown of the Idaho and Carolina game, Carolina, I think, was reading their press clippings. One thing I know about Carolina is they usually don't repeat the same performance. Last year, they were a team that every time they had a setback, they responded the following week. And when they responded, it was a complete 180 from what the team you saw the previous week. Carolina with the win on the road, you can't – again, that type of stat I just gave you, really not a stat. It's more like an observation. But if you look at the history of Carolina, once they lost, if they lost the previous game, they win 90% of the matchups they play the next week in their history. Very impressive turnaround. They are a team that – from what I have on my screen, I could be wrong, but then again, stats do change. They only have only twice in their history has a losing streak in the regular season. That tells you how good Carolina is historically. Are they on a losing streak? No, they have a win. So that's a different perspective. So if you look at how they can translate from coming all the way back from Idaho to Greensboro, you're in your own building, your own venue. You don't have to travel. You have that extra day of rest. You have an extra day of repair. You have that extra day to practice. Then you get the game day. So it helps them recover. For Omaha, you just came off of a game Sunday against Tri-State. You travel to Greensboro, not as long as from Greensboro to Idaho, but you travel to Greensboro Sunday. It's going to be a different type of atmosphere. Omaha is going to be introduced to an NAL crowd. But one thing I know about this matchup from watching Omaha last year in the CIF, or just watching Omaha for the last 5 or 6 years, they're a team that plays up to their competition. They're a team that last year didn't have any competition, in my opinion. Every team they played against, they blew out. The only team that gave them a little scare was Sioux City, but that's a rivalry. You expect rivalries to be like that. But Omaha demolished everyone they played last year in the CIF. This is mono versus mono. Two powers, two big brands in the industry. Carolina has the dudes, has the squad, but Omaha also has some dudes too. They have a key factor in Tommy Armstrong, who's been there, who's done that, has won championships, who's an experienced quarterback. almost a perfection game. The game last week against Tri-State was almost a game where you look like that was almost near perfect. Taking them against a team that went across the country, come back, kind of, I think they got, you know, kind of got their chin knocked in a little bit by Idaho. So they got a little, you know, a little shook, a week off, some repair, recovery to this game here in Carolina. Key factors or key situations I see in this game for Omaha. Tommy Armstrong needs to play like Tommy Armstrong does. If he still does, like last week I saw limited times I seen him, he was a little behind, a little delayed on some of the passes. Maybe that's just him trying to, you know, work out the kinks. It's usually do that. You want to do that in preseason games. But his mobility is going to be key. Carolina's defense is pretty good. And Carolina defense will try to keep Tommy Armstrong in the paint. And they're going to dare Tommy to beat him in the air. For Omaha, you have to shut down not one, but two receivers. You got to stop Kendrick Kings, and you have to shut down Adam Smith. If those dudes are catching footballs all over the field, it's going to be a long day for Omaha. But do I think this is going to be in a tight situation, a tight game? Do I think this could be a preview of the championship game coming later in the year? Probably. But one thing I want to say is the clash in Greensboro. You got some key dudes you got to look forward to. My battle to watch is, can Carolina stop Tommy Armstrong? And can Omaha stop those receivers for Carolina? Whoever wins those battles, whoever wins the majority of those battles will win the game, in my opinion. I think it's going to be an entertaining game. I'll give you my prediction after Matt breaks down what he thinks are the keys to this game.
Yeah, the keys to this game, for me, it's simple. I agree with a lot of what you said, but Tommy Armstrong definitely has to be Tommy Armstrong from last year. But, you know, we've got some tall receivers, and I didn't really notice much about Carolina's DBs to see, you know, were they tall, were they average size, whatever. But we've got some guys that can go up there and get the football. They can jump up, leap over those guys and get the ball. But I think one of the biggest keys offensively for us is running back Tobias Taylor. That guy is an absolute beast. He joined us about midway through the season last year, and we had heard all the hype. We had heard all the stuff about him and all the things that he could do on the field, and he delivered 100%. We saw him. It was like man amongst boys against the Tri-State Tridents. It just was. I'm sorry, Tridents, but that's just the reality of it. And if he can get going, he's a hard guy to bring down. It takes sometimes two or three guys to bring him down and to get him onto the on the turf. So he's going to be a big contributor. But our defensive backs, again this year, are second to none in my opinion. Chris Perry, CP3 as we call him here in Omaha, Trey Dudley Giles, that secondary, they're going to be out to prove a point. Trust me when I tell you that they know who Adam Smith is, and I am pretty certain that Coach Knight has a plan to hopefully try and be able to contain. I don't know if you can ever fully stop Adam Smith, but trying to contain Adam Smith and Kendrick Ings. I mean, I know that's a hard thing to do, but I think we're going to be up for the task. And you know, don't discount also our defensive line. You know, we had Rudy Gooney on our Prime Cuts podcast. Dude is a beast up front, along with Cameron Hunt and, you know, our other guys there on the defensive line. It's going to be a battle on Sunday night. Sunday afternoon. I'm excited for it.
So, who you have for the win, sir? Who's your pick?
I mean, you know, it's not going to surprise anybody, but I can't go against my guys. I think ultimately what happens is I think Omaha comes out on top. You know, last year's league MVP in CIF, Tommy Armstrong, leads our team to a victory. But I'm gonna call it closer than the experts think. I think this is going to be a good one. It's going to be a nail biter down to the wire, but I think Omaha's going to pull it out in the end.
You got Omaha? Well, I gotta go with the home team. I'm picking the Carolina Cobras. I think it's just the travel issues. I think this is going to be an exciting game. I think Carolina got a little bit of a wake-up call in Idaho. One thing I know about Carolina is, again, if they do struggle or they do lose, The next game, they're a lot better team. But I think this is going to be a game where you look in the fourth quarter and you go, wow, can we do this next week and the following week and the week after that and the week after that? I think this is going to be that type of matchup. I think it's going to be highly entertaining. I think it comes down to fourth quarter and a crucial turnover would be a determining factor in this game. I think this is a close game. I think this is like a 54-48 type of battle. I think both offenses are going to score. I think the star is going to shine in both games. I think Carolina gets that extra stop that they need to win the game. And I think it's going to be an entertaining game matchup. Now, if this game was in Omaha, I'm picking Omaha all day. But the game is in Greensboro, so I side with the Greensboro, the Carolina Cobras. So we can finally say it. This week, it's the battle of the titles. Whoever wins this week on Sunday, someone gets to wear the title next week because we went 2-0 this past weekend, so we can't wear a championship there, Matt. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the edition of episode 138 of Inside the Walls podcast. And of course, again, you can follow us on all social media platforms, Inside the Walls podcast on Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and of course, we're on caffeine.tv. Again, follow us at nationalarenaleague.com as well for more up-to-date information. Again, before we can go, Matt, I know you have a show coming up later this week on Friday. Preview your show, my friend.
Yeah, Friday night, new night, new time, 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. But it's going to be the same great podcast. We got an excellent show. We've got an interview planned. We're going to debut a new addition to the Prime Cuts podcast that I'm really super excited about. You'll see some advertisement there for that. You've seen it throughout this week already. We're going to just be there 7 o'clock. It's going to be great. We'll be announcing one thing that I will let people know is we're going to be announcing the Prime Cuts Player of the Week starting this week on the Prime Cuts podcast. So stay tuned for that this coming Friday, tomorrow, actually. On the Inside the Walls Network and on the Omaha Beat Facebook page.
Again, you can follow him on Omaha Beat's Facebook page is what the show is streamed on. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Follow us on all social media platforms. We're even on Spotify. Again, to the listener that reached out to me on email, I do apologize. Once you hear this show this day, this episode will be up for grabs. With that, ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 138 of Inside the Walls podcast. Week 2 of the National Arena League kicks off on Saturday with the Cedar Rapids River Kings and the Colorado Spartans in the preseason action, of course, the clash in Greensboro for the 2024 Week 2 matchup. Probably a preview? Maybe. Maybe not. I am Jim. That is Matt. This is Inside the Walls podcast. Be well. Be safe. Enjoy the games this weekend. If you're going to the games, please drink responsibly and get back home. We'll see you next week for another breakdown of the game. We'll be back on our normal day next week. Do apologize for the delay this week. But then, again, it's podcast. Keep updates on all of our platforms as well for more up-to-date information. That's Matt. I'm Jim. This is Inside Wall Podcast, episode 128. We'll see you guys next week.
Omaha Beat Football. Prime Dancers. Rump Roasters. Slaughterhouse. Are you ready?
DJ next one.
You ready? 3, 2, 1, go. Welcome to the...